Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday morning. It's January 22nd. 10 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. 13 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Wasatch Beck. Good morning, Leslie. Yeah, another frigid start to your Wednesday. More sunshine, though, into the afternoon. Temperatures mid-20s for Park City today, upper 20s in Heber. High pressure should keep things pretty quiet. It's just to the west of us, generating this northwest flow, which is going to keep temperatures a little bit below average, continuing to see more single-digit possibilities overnight tonight into tomorrow for Park City, just 27 for the high on Thursday with sunshine. Changes moving in this weekend, though. We are tracking a storm system that'll bring some light snow showers to northern Utah. The brunt of the storm should dig further south and actually impact the southern part of the state, which is great news for our southern mountain areas, which desperately need snowfall. We need some, of course, as well. We will see snow pick up late Friday with temperatures near 34 on Friday afternoon, but dropping to 13 Saturday morning, 25 for the high on Saturday. Plan on off and on snow showers. Early estimates still show maybe 2 to 4 inches of snowfall for Park City. Looking at temperatures in the 20s again on Sunday. Upper 20s on Monday with clearing conditions. We could see some lingering snow showers on Sunday. Some models suggest, though, that the remaining moisture from the storm should stay to the south of us. So we'll keep our eye on Sunday. Monday, Tuesday next week are looking quiet. Temperatures do climb above freezing on Tuesday. I have about 34 in Park City. For Heber, similar conditions, increasing moisture. Friday night into Saturday, we should see 38 on Friday, but drop back down to just 30 degrees on Saturday for the high. Plan on snow showers. Could see some minor accumulations. Potential for some lingering snow showers on Sunday, a high of just 27 after overnight lows in the teens and single digits over the weekend. We should stay right around 5 degrees on Monday morning for the overnight low and 31 for the high. Back to 36 on Tuesday, so finally above freezing again after staying below it over the weekend with single-digit temperatures to head out the door on Tuesday morning as well.
Okay, Nate, thank you.
You bet.
And with a look in the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Nikki. Good morning, Nikki.
So yesterday was a generally quiet day in the backcountry. Winds were pretty high along ridge lines, but there was one skier-triggered avalanche on West Monitor. This was about 2 feet deep and 100 feet wide. No injuries. Today, the avalanche danger is moderate on all mid and upper elevation slopes. We've had elevated winds for over 24 hours now and plenty of soft snow available for transport. So we should expect to see fresh wind drifts on all aspects. That includes elevations, drainages, or subfeatures that are typically more wind protected. There's also a possibility of triggering an avalanche that fails into the buried facets on mid and upper elevation west to north to east facing aspects, particularly on slopes with a thinner snowpack.
Okay, Nikki, thank you. Stay tuned. In just a few minutes, we'll be checking in with Mountain Mediation Program Director Chris Campbell, along with board member and family law attorney Ann Cameron, to tell us more about the launch of a family mediation program. Park City Council member Ed Parisian has a recap of yesterday's special meeting. Not a lot there, so we'll talk about some other stuff. And High Valley Transit Executive Director Caroline Rodriguez with an update on some of the construction projects they've got going and the new winter routes. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include Dr. Mark Schultz, the Associate Director of the Harvard Study of Adult Development. He talks about the good life. Lessons from the world's longest scientific study of happiness. Then Dr. Christy Kane, a therapist who discusses digital detox and how hormones like dopamine and serotonin interact with how we balance our use of electronics. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, of course, heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Taking a look now at some local news. Newly released video from Jordanelle State Park sheds lights on what happened the night a Summit County man fatally shot a hideout man in a road rage incident. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports, and a warning, this story does include details that may be upsetting to some listeners.
Browns King and resident 62-year-old Greg Kyle DeBoer admitted to shooting 61-year-old hideout local Patrick Hayes just outside Jordanelle State Park back in September. In late December, DeBoer was charged with one felony count of obstruction of justice for burying the gun that killed Hayes. DeBoer claimed self-defense and has not been charged with Hayes' death. Wasatch County Sheriff Jared Rigby has said that's because there's not enough evidence to show DeBoer wasn't defending himself. In response to KPCW's records requests, on Tuesday, the Wasatch County Attorney's Office released video from the night of the fatal shooting, as well as the 911 call from a passerby reporting Hayes' death the next day. The altercation happened around 11 p.m. on September 25th at the Ross Creek entrance to the park. The security camera video shows the sequence of events Rigby previously shared with the public. In the video, Hayes's car stops just in front of the guardhouse, its right turn signal blinking. DeBoer's car pulls in a moment later. Hayes gets out of the car and walks toward DeBoer's Jeep. As he approaches, DeBoer accelerates toward Hayes. Then both Hayes and the Jeep lurch to the left, the SUV's tires screeching. In the video, Hayes asks DeBoer if he wants to get out of the car and shouts profanities at him. Then a single gunshot. A moment later, DeBoer's car reverses out of sight. The next day, a passerby out for a walk found Hayes dead beside his car, the engine still running and blinkers still flashing.
911, what's the address of your emergency?
I'm at the entrance to the Ross Creek trailhead at Jornell. There's a man laying on the side here. He's covered in blood.
According to an arrest affidavit, investigators questioned DeBoer in mid-November. During that interview, he allegedly admitted he shot Hayes in self-defense and buried the gun near his home. He was arrested for obstruction of justice about 6 weeks later. The felony charge carries 1 to 15 years in prison and up to $10,000 in fines. Meanwhile, Sue Ann Kern, Hayes' fiance, says she's angry prosecutors aren't charging DeBoer with homicide. In a post on social media, she asked community members to write letters to the county attorney. Kern was not immediately available for comment Tuesday. Neither the Wasatch County Sheriff's Office nor the Wasatch County Attorney's Office responded to requests for comment either. DeBoer's preliminary hearing is in 4th District Court Wednesday morning. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Well, Mountain Mediation Center is launching a family mediation program in the studio. With details, I have Program Director Chris Campbell on the phone. I have Board Member and Family Law Attorney Ann Cameron. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us, Leslie.
Thank you, Leslie.
Chris, maybe you can just start by telling us what this program entails.
Sure. So at Mountain Mediation, we've been doing a mediation for a number of years now in the community. Primarily, we started at Small Claims Court, and we've done work with landlord tenants as well. Right now, what we're really interested is in providing access to excellent family mediation services for everybody in the community. So this is helping people resolve conflicts around divorce or custody or childcare, and doing that in a way that people can afford to access that service.
So, Anne, what's your role in this?
Well, I'm a board member for the Mount Mediation Center, and I have been a family law attorney for 15, 20 years now. I no longer represent clients, but I do have a mediation practice. So as a board member, I'm involved in all the projects for access to justice for Mountain Mediation. And as a domestic mediator, I have connections so that I was able to put together a group of very high caliber mediators who are willing to contribute their time to this program so that we can have a robust domestic mediation program that's available to everyone in our community, regardless of their geographic location or financial situation. We have a sliding scale fee arrangement so that we can serve all the members of our community, whether they are modest means individuals, underserved population individuals, or people who just are unaware of domestic mediation as a whole. So my role has been working with Chris, putting together this pilot program and really get it launched so that we can have that robust program in the Wasatch back, because we haven't had such a thing in the past.
So how is mediation different than going through the court system?
Mediation is where the parties, whether they have attorneys or not, can meet with a mediator who is a neutral third party to negotiate the terms of, in domestic case, in the terms of how their family settlement is going to look. We deal with property settlement, child custody, child support, ongoing family support, and all of that. And if, when you work with a mediator, you can come to a full resolution of your case without ever having to go to court, get it all resolved. It oftentimes ends up with a better relationship between the parties, and which is great if they have an ongoing relationship with minor children or adult children. And whether you do it in a private practice and have your documents drafted either by the mediator or by attorneys, or whether you go through a service such as Mountain Mediation Center or Utah Dispute Resolution in Salt Lake, there are agencies that can help draft all those documents and get them filed with the court. So the parties never even have to go into a courtroom, and they can get things resolved in the way that they decide. It's a process of self-determination. So the parties can figure out what their family situation is going to look like moving forward, as long as it is within the confines of the law in Utah.
So when doesn't mediation work well? Is it just when the parties won't talk to each other?
There can be, if people are very entrenched in their position, if they are highly reactive in some cases of domestic violence where there's a power imbalance, mediation may not yield a result that is durable. But if parties won't talk to each other, they can still participate in mediation. They don't even have to see each other. Whether they're mediating in person or via Zoom, they can be completely separate, either in separate physical rooms or in separate Zoom rooms. And then the mediator can go back and forth. I manage a lot of cases where parties do not want to see or speak with each other, and we get some pretty lovely and creative resolutions for them using the skills of a mediator. Facilitative, evaluative, transformational.
Yeah. And my guess is that it's a lot less expensive.
Yes. Well, that's my experience from what I've, having been a divorce litigator in the past and being a divorce attorney going through mediation with clients versus going to court with clients, it is much more cost effective. Preparation for mediation can be expensive if you have attorneys, if you have a complex estate or family situation. But for the bulk of the people that I work with, it is much more cost effective, much less expensive. Going to court is very, very expensive, both financially and emotionally. So mediation is, it's not easy, but if people are willing to sit down and have that those difficult conversations, yes, it is much more cost effective. And especially with the Mountain Mediation Project, with this domestic pilot, we work on a sliding scale. So these four mediators that we have will serve like any members of the population, whether they can pay the full fee, whether they have attorneys, or if they need to be on a sliding scale that we deal with. Chris is in charge of that stuff, not me, but how much it will cost so that everybody has access to really high caliber mediators and can feel confident that they're getting a great service.
And when the mediator is between two people who are really angry at one another is my guess. I mean, what is it that you try to get from them to know that you can come to some sort of resolution?
In my practice, a lot of what I do is we don't explore necessarily why they're angry. I mean, we may have to touch on that. But basically, it's like, what is your goal? What are your interests? It is an interest-based process. And if the goal is, you know, that the children will thrive, do well in school, have good relationships with their parents, go on to be productive individuals, if we have those as cornerstones, then we use our conversation is based on how do we get there? What do we do? So generally we work on what type of resolution, what do people want to see for themselves? What do they want to come out of this mediation with moving forward? So we don't usually get bogged down into angriness. We get down to what the actual issues are and what a resolution might look like. And a lot of it has to do with how we can craft a resolution that's durable so that the children will thrive.
Yeah, so are the minor children ever involved in mediation?
No, they are specifically not involved. They're not allowed to be present either in person or via Zoom. So, and also when there's a, there's a whole best practices outline for how to mediate via Zoom. And part of that includes making sure no one else is in the room. And mediation is a confidential process. So whatever happens in mediation stays in mediation unless there's a written agreement at the conclusion of mediation. And I speak with everyone that I mediate with that this is particularly important if you have children together, be they minor children or adult children, but specifically minor children. You do not share what happens in mediation with the children unless they have a resolution, and then it's mom and dad, mom and mom, you know, parents decided this is what we're going to do. And so that the it's a unified message going to the kids, but they are not at all involved in mediation. They're not allowed to be there.
So do the mediators ever talk to the children on their own, asking them what they want?
They do not. If we need the input from the children, there are different ways of doing it. Some people will have a guardian ad litem if they are involved in a court case, and that is an attorney that is the voice of the child. Or in a different mediation setting or in a collaborative law setting, we have what are called child specialists who are psychologists, child psychologists specifically, that know how to talk to the children and represent the child's point of view and the best interest of the child, essentially. So Natalie Malovich, who is one of the mediators in this pilot program, used to do custody evaluations for the court, and she is a PhD psychologist, and I used to use her all the time as a child specialist in collaborative and mediation cases when I was practicing.
Yeah, I guess.
And I will bring her in if I need her.
Yeah, and I guess I misunderstood, but I had thought during child custody cases that children were sometimes brought in to sit before the judge, no?
Oh, no. If a child is going to be interviewed by the judge, which is extremely rare, in my 25 years of practice now, I have seen one, what we call in-camera interview, where the child went to the back. If the judge wants to know the child's point of view, they will appoint what's called a guardian ad litem, who is the attorney for the child. And that attorney speaks with the child, interviews the child, and then will represent the child's best interest. Children are never in, oh, I shouldn't say never, that's an absolute. In 25 years, one time I have seen a child in a courthouse talking to a judge. The children's point of view can definitely be taken into account. That's what custody evaluations are for often. So it's not that the children don't have, that their position isn't considered, but they are insulated from the legal process because it is not a positive experience.
Okay. So any resolution, is binding because it's then documented in an official court document?
That's an excellent question. Mediation agreements, if they are signed by the parties at the conclusion of mediation and written up by their attorneys, those are binding contracts. If somebody wants to try to enforce it or not enforce it, set it aside, that's a court battle. But yes, you can come up, my mediations, we come up with mediation settlements that may be subject to review by attorneys, or the parties may say, yes, we want this to be binding. But if you have attorneys in your mediation and they draft the documents and everybody signs off on the document at the end, then that is a stipulation between the parties that is enforceable, yes.
Okay. Chris, this is something the center hasn't done in the past?
We've done maybe one or two cases here and there, but this is really a concerted, focused effort. It's in part due to the generosity of the Women's Giving Fund grant that we received in 2024. Through the Park City Community Foundation that has really enabled us to bring in and build a focused effort, help educate people on mediation, help them be aware that the service is available. One of the things that we do is it's important for us to serve our Spanish-speaking community as well, so we make sure that we have Spanish interpreters available in a mediation to help communicate clearly.
Okay, so how does it work? I mean, and how are you, other than today, how are you getting the word out to let people know that it's available?
Well, that's a great question. We're reaching out in various media sources, social media, things like that. People, if they want to learn more, they can go to our website at mountainmediationcenter.org, or they can give us a call at 435-336-0060 to get more information, to schedule a mediation.
Okay, and then what do they need to provide you in terms of what they get charged?
So we've got a process on intake. Once you reach out to our case managers, they'll walk you through. We've got just a simple income survey to make sure, you know, to talk through what the pricing is.
And because it's with grant money, I mean, do you foresee once the grant money's over that you're going to need to cut back, or you just have to find more money somewhere else?
Yeah, so this grant is really about launching this pilot program. Mm-hmm. So we will learn over the course of that what we need to sustain it. There'll be an initial effort up front to get things really solid, and then, yeah, we should be able to sustain it.
Okay. Anything else do you think people need to know, Ann or Chris?
I would like to invite anybody in the Summit or Wasatch County areas and those communities to contact Mountain Mediation, because as you highlighted, Leslie, this Mountain Mediation has not had a robust domestic mediation program. It has been available, but nothing like what we have put together for this. I am very, very excited about this. The mediators that we have are some of the most sought after mediators in Northern Utah that have agreed to do at least 3 mediations a year at the minimum for this program. So this is an opportunity for our communities to access some of these truly great mediators and not have to worry about, you know, do I have to go to Salt Lake? Do I have to do this? Do I have to do that? Because there's not a big mediation presence for domestic stuff in Summit County. We always have to use mediators from elsewhere. And now we've got our own little cache of them. So I'm very excited for it. And I'm hopeful that the community will embrace this and make use of this resource to bring us all together.
Chris?
Yep. And so again, you can go to mountainmediationcenter.org or call 435-336-0060 for more information.
Okay. Chris Campbell and Cameron, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thanks.
Park City Council met yesterday in a special meeting. In the studio to recap, Councilmember Ed Parisian, good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Yeah, not much of a meeting. I mean, no. I guess what had to happen that it couldn't wait until your next meeting?
It's the licenses for the pop-ups for Sundance. They want to cut it off at the last, so everybody gets their last dibs in there.
Okay, so if you're not approved, you're not approved at this point.
You go rogue, I guess.
Okay, the council was set to approve this year's events at the McPolin Barn. Did you go ahead and do that?
We did.
Anything new?
Nope, same exact schedule.
Okay.
Snowshoe, the barn door is open, the scarecrow.
Okay.
Event.
With the loss of the Church of the Dirt, any plans to allow weddings one day?
It could be kind of cool. I don't know. It never came up.
Well, it's always been off limits.
I know. Oh, has it?
Just too much impact, I
right,
think.
I know, right? I know I see a lot of people there taking wedding pictures on the side of their park, but I don't know. We need a new Church of Dirt somewhere, don't we?
Well, I got you then, and we got lots of time left. Sundance, any word from the Institute or the folks that are looking at the 3 cities that are bidding for Sundance after 2026? I mean, have they reached out to you, asked questions, or want to know more info about the bid?
They've been mum. Right after this year's fest, they're going to announce, so we're all kind of excited about what they're going to say, you know. I don't know. What do you think? Where's it going?
I have no idea.
I hope it stays here.
Well,
or at least Salt Lake, you know.
But is it time to do something different? I mean, it's been here for 40 years.
I love it. I mean, it's 2 weeks. The movies I've seen because of it have just been unbelievable. So personally, I'm sad to see it, you know, at least we're not going to be hit no matter what. We're not going to be the hub anymore. So that's a little sad, I think.
Yeah, a few years ago, I had a Main Street restaurant owner tell me that with the arrival of Vail and Altera in town and the Epic and Icon passes, every night is Sundance. So I guess, how big of an economic hit would it be to have Sundance go somewhere else?
Well, I don't know the exact numbers, but it's millions of dollars that they, you know, bring in sales tax and local business. It's going to be a hit for sure.
that couldn't be replaced by people just coming to ski that maybe avoid the area?
Well, that's right. That's always the talk, right? It's like, well, if we didn't have Sundance, would people more people come and ski because there'd be more hotel rooms open? You know, because Sundance has kind of scaled back the last few years since COVID. They don't do as many movies at the Eccles like they used to right through the end. And I don't know what, maybe we gradually just phased out of it. Maybe that helps. But it's going to be a lot of, I'm going to miss it personally. I know that.
Okay. What's the latest on the Main Street area plan? This was hot and heavy last year, and now that we've heard from some critics, it seems to have died off. What's going on?
Well, we didn't approve it, but we didn't disapprove it. So we said, all right, there's some good stuff here. Let's, I thought we were supposed to look at it in January again, but apparently not. But we're going to start looking at pieces of it. Where, you know, what pieces can we do? Some of the things I don't even know if they're possible to do. So that's kind of in my mind. Let's see what's possible first, and then we can kind of go from there. And I mean, some good ideas there, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we had heard part of the impetus for all of this was that this fear that with all of the other development happening around that people aren't going to come to Main Street anymore because there's so many other options. But, I mean, realistically, where are people going to go? Walk up a quaint little historic Main Street with shops, restaurants, bars, live music, or head over to a hotel
prefab
that looks like any other hotel off of a freeway?
Right, I know, prefab village. Well, I guess the question is, if they're there, how to get them to come here, right? I mean, obviously, there's going to be a lot of people out there, right? East Village, there's going to be a lot of people staying. So how do we get a piece of that pie, you know? Do they want to, how do we get them from there to here at night to have dinner, hang out? It's a legitimate question, I think, right? It's like, we're Main Street, but you come here, maybe if you don't stay here, maybe you're going to only come here once versus during a whole week, you know, so maybe you're not going to come as much. I mean, I think it's legit to ask the questions and stay relevant. And
but I guess if the whole reason we're doing this is because people aren't coming to Main Street, it's like they're just not coming to Park City. It's not like if you're in the area, you're coming to Main Street.
So I
guess it's just like, I mean, we're saying that that's why we're doing this, but it's like, how do we know?
I mean, they're still coming. I mean, the numbers show they're still coming. I think this is kind of preemptive, you know, because nothing's going to get built for 5-10 years, right? So I think this is just like, all right, if this takes off, let's be prepared. Let's have a plan. Let's execute if we need to. The numbers are still pretty good on Main. I mean, we had record sales tax the last October or November, whenever the last reporting period was. So we're still doing well. But you want to keep going, right? You want to keep it vibrant. You don't want to give people the same old street 20 years to walk up and down with new businesses, you know, little difference, you know, keep it going.
So if this is going to happen, it's going to happen before the Olympics, no?
I would assume so, yeah. What do we got, 9 years now?
Yeah. And any money, gotta give yourself some buffer there.
Right, it's kind of tight, you know, you want to build hotels in 9 years, it's going to have to start. So there's a lot of, I mean, my personal reason for not supporting it fully was because we just hadn't heard the public, you know, and it was just that one meeting, basically, that we got a chance to hear the public. So I want to hear more about what they think we should do and kind of go from there.
Yeah. I mean, we had a traffic accident down between Park Avenue and Bonanza Drive on Deer Valley Drive. Was it last week? I mean, traffic didn't move, and I guess it's just like, how do you think that we can add now hundreds more hotel rooms and have one traffic accident and bring the town to a standstill?
It's a beautiful thing. Well, I guess the idea was like, if you're staying here, you don't have to go anywhere. You can maybe get on the town lift, ski at Park City Mountain. You can take the bus, walk down the stairs here, take the bus, go to Deer Valley. I mean, that to me, that's what is kind of the plan, get people staying in the core.
All right, what about the Bonanza 5 Acres? Any update there?
Nothing I can talk about. Nothing I even know, truthfully, because it's, they had the committee. They don't tell us. They don't tell us a whole lot, Leslie. Hmm. You know, this we're going on. We're moving. I mean, we're all very excited. We're not giving up on this. This is going. The RFP's been answered, so.
Should that be our priority over this Main Street area plan?
I think we can do it all. I think this particular council group, we're all ready to go. I mean, we're willing to put the time in. We have put the time in. We'll do special sessions if we need to. I don't want anything to slip through the cracks. So I can multitask.
Okay, so where are things getting stopped at then? I mean, if the council's ready to approve, why don't you have something before you?
On the 5 acre?
Mm.
Well, they picked a, I think they picked a chosen vendor. Mm. So it's about negotiations at this point. We did all the legwork with the RFP, say this is what we want, this is what we prefer. We got that out, we got responses. So I don't think there's really a delay going on. It's happening.
Okay.
Just not at our public meetings.
Any update on pickleball? We heard from Ken Fisher earlier this week about the plans to put some courts in at the Utah Film Studio.
Right.
Any word on whether or not that's going to work?
I've been very involved with that one, Leslie, as the rec liaison and former on the rec board. I just got a text from Ken last night, said the pickleball court is in. It's sitting at the movie studio. He's going to be there this morning. I'm going to go see. It's all stacked up on pallets. It needs like 3 days to warm up and get acclimated to an indoor because it's been shipped in the cold. So it needs 2 or 3 days to get flexible again, and then we're all going to get over there and put it down.
Okay.
See if it works.
Okay, so we don't know whether it works at this point.
We don't yet. We're going to make it work. We're very determined to make this work.
And then what about evaluating bids for a permanent facility there at Quinn's Junction? Of course, we know that the bond with voters failed to do that, but yeah. Plans to bring that back?
You mean on pickleball?
Permanent pickleball, yeah.
Well, we did a request for proposal last year, and yeah, we council picked a spot to put it behind the ice rink. We went out to bid, and now they're negotiating with that preferred vendor. And hopefully, let's see, what is it, November 25th? Spring, summer of 26, it'll get built, ready for the following winter. So.
Okay, so we didn't need a bond to do it. We're just doing it with
a
revenues.
PPP, right. Hmm. Basically, the standard form, we supply the land, they build the building, they operate. They give the locals a better deal because of our involvement. So it's kind of a, you know, I guess we didn't need the bond for that, right? But it shouldn't cost us anything, you know, except a piece of land that we really didn't have a whole lot of use for. So I think it could be a good spot. It's out at Quinn's, which is sports oriented anyway. So hopefully that'll be the solution. We can get pickleballers and tennis players to love each other again. It's tough with just one facility. It's really, it's put a lot of pressure, a lot of stress on a lot of people. And I'm psyched to get a solution to that.
Okay. Hey, the citizens referendum to overturn the Summit County Council's approval of the Dakota Pacific Development Agreement. Does the city have a dog in this fight?
No.
Do you personally have an opinion?
Are
you going to sign the petition?
I'm going to sign the petition, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do you, what, not think that's the right development, or you just don't, for that location?
I don't live there, so I can't really speak for that. You know, with all the shenanigans going on behind the scenes on this thing, it just makes you wonder what's really going on. So, you know me, I'm a little anti-establishment kind of guy, so I question.
So you just want to at least give voters the chance to weigh in?
I think so, right? I mean, I represent the people. I try to be responsible to the people, and I think people want to know that their elected officials are for them, you know, and support them, whether it's politically advantageous or not. I mean, I'll always vote for the people.
All right. So you spent your first year as a city council member.
I know.
Any big lessons learned?
Ay, ay, ay. A lot. It's a lot. It's random. That's the part that I'm not a, you know, it's just meeting here, oh, cancel that meeting, move that meeting, do this meeting, have that meeting, cut that ribbon, meet these people. So it's a lot more random than I thought.
Okay.
If I can say that. It's great. It's been awesome. Can't believe it's been a year already. I'm starting to get into my organization skills are getting better because of it. I'm feeling like I put a good year in. I learned a lot. And I'm ready to go. I'm still got energy, still ready to go, still want to tackle all the things that we need to tackle. And like I say, I can multitask. I can do five things at once, I think, as long as I have a good staff to help, right?
Yeah.
Which we do.
So if the randomness is the hard part of the job, what's been kind of the gratifying part of the job?
The gratifying part of the job is when you walk out of a meeting and you're like, ooh, we did something good for the people here. You know, whether it's approving something or disapproving something, you know, depending on what that particular object is. When I know that I represented the people well, that's when I get really excited. I go home at night, I'm like, ah, that was so good. You know, so that's the best feeling is, you know, knowing that you did what you set out to do, and you got approval of a majority of the council. So that's part that keeps me going.
Okay.
It really does.
And thanks for coming by.
You bet, Leslie. Good to see you again.
That's Park City City Council member Ed Parisian. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, construction of the new High Valley Transit facility nearing completion and the process for building the bus rapid transit or BRT lanes along 224 moving forward. On the phone with an update from High Valley Transit, I have Executive Director Caroline Rodriguez. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too. So where are we on the construction for those facilities, new facilities along US 40?
So we're nearing the home stretch, and we hope that we will be fully moved in by mid-March.
Oh, that fast.
Oh, yeah. I know it seemed very slow at the beginning, but there was a lot of prep work to be done and land work to be done. But if anybody's seen it recently, it's almost ready to go.
So what's out there?
So we have our administrative and operations building, which is about just under 20,000 square feet on two floors. I think people have heard me say this before, but the second floor encompasses 9 units of workforce housing that is going to be for our employees. Then we have our 5-bay maintenance facility, and then a third building is enclosed and covered bus parking and charging.
Okay, so on the calendar, I see a ribbon cutting set for May 9th. So that's the plan to open it all up to the public at that point?
That okay. is the plan. We're running that date by the full board this Thursday at our meeting. And then hopefully that date will be finalized tomorrow.
Okay. So I've read some scathing comments on social media about how dirty the High Valley Transit buses are. Do you have a place to wash them?
No. I have seen those comments as well. I think it's a shame that that's what people are focusing on when we provide service 5 a.m. to 1 a.m., 365 days a year. We rotate our buses down to past Salt Lake to get them washed, but we don't have a bus wash. And I am not about to put my employees in danger by having them spray down a bus in sub-zero temperatures. I'm just not going to do that. It's not what we're focused on.
So does the new facility have a bus wash?
It does.
Okay, so they'll be clean soon enough.
Soon enough, yep.
All right.
And one hates it more than we do. We're doing the best we can, sir.
In the meeting packet for this week, you've kind of included the comments that you receive from riders every month. One complaint, complaining about how one driver plays books on tape, another plays, quote, left-wing activist radio. So what's the rule for drivers about what gets played over the bus speakers?
So I think that's a little bit misleading because I don't believe that's being played over the bus speaker. It is being played in a personal speaker. The rule is absolutely don't play anything over the full all vehicle speakers. That is not approved. We do allow drivers who are working, you know, a 10-hour shift to use their personal speaker. But if any of the riders can hear it, it's too loud. And as soon as that's reported, we usually pull the camera footage and address it immediately with the driver.
Yeah. And I noticed the comments provide a lot of suggestions as well. One asking that the bus is going to Salt Lake City. Can they wait for other connecting buses to show up before taking up? There was one, you know, it's like she arrives on a bus that it's like comes 7 minutes after the Salt Lake City bus leaves.
Sometimes we can hold the Salt Lake City route is really difficult to hold. One, because there is not very much layover time, and so the connection is very tight already. A second reason is that we're very limited in space at Salt Lake Central, so if we don't pull in at our time spot, we may miss it and we may not get to charge. So while we try to hold the connections, if it's a matter of the bus timing isn't perfect, we can't hold the rest of the group up to make that connection work. We try the best we can to schedule all of those time connections, but it doesn't work in every single circumstance.
Hmm. Okay. Taking a look back on 2024, let's talk about how busy you were. I guess with the exception of January and April, it looked like to me that ridership actually had dropped off from a year ago.
Actually, we are up 16% year over year. We had almost 1.6 million rides in 2024.
Okay. I guess I'm kind of looking at the graph chart, and it looked like 2024 was down, so I'm not sure what I was looking at then. Oh, that's good news.
Yeah, it's great news. We had almost 1.2 million fixed route rides, 330,000 micro rides, and almost 22,000 new app creations in 2024.
Okay. What was interesting, Wasatch County riders, it looked like, making up about 43% of your riders. That's crazy.
Yes. It's the adoption of public transit in Wasatch has astounded all of us. It's a happy surprise. We knew that there was unmet demand, but we didn't know that there was this much.
So all you're offering right now in Wasatch County, my understanding, is that you've got one fixed route and then the micro transit?
That's correct. And we actually have added advanced booked rides for paratransit customers as of January 1st. But yeah, I mean, the only full day service out there is micro transit.
Hmm. So are there plans then to kind of boost that given those kind of numbers?
The High Valley Board would love to do that. The Wasatch County Council is still considering that. The demand is clearly there. The data shows that. It's probably our top priority to add more service into and in Wasatch County.
All right. Let's talk about some of those other long-term plans the board is considering. Something that looks like between Kimball Junction, Colville, and even Hennifer?
I wouldn't say they're considering that. I think it's always been a discussion topic. Mm. We've gotten through about half of our short-range transit plan, and it shows small concentration of demand there. I know recently there's been discussion about Colville and Hennifer, but when you look at it in the big picture, the demand from Colville, Hennifer, and sort of coming into the basin area is very, very low, and the service would be very expensive. So that's something the board's going to have to consider over the next year as we finalize our short-range transit plan.
Okay, and then what about Oakley and Peoa?
Same there. We have a proposal for a route that's addressed in our short range transit plan. The board and the public will be able to see that draft as well as the cost implications and give feedback as to whether they think it's a high enough return on investment or there's better ways to invest the district's money.
Hmm. Okay. Let's just talk quickly about how big of a budget that you approved for 2025.
Sure. Our operating budget, I believe, is right around $25 million, and the capital budget is a little bit more than that, I think. I should have brushed up on the exact numbers, but I think we're right under $58 million for operating and capital and debt service.
Okay. Wow, that's a huge operation.
It is, and it's all taking place out of a tent and trailer.
And how much has High Valley Transit bonded for?
In total, I believe we have bonded for $18 million, and that's just towards the facility. We don't use that for operating or anything. About 85% of our operating funds come from sales tax revenues. And as your listeners are very familiar with, over 50% of those revenues are paid by visitors to Summit County.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the bus rapid transit lanes. The board has a contract for almost $1 million on the this month's agenda to pay for what for the BRT?
So that contract is to engage with a CMGC, which stands for Construction Management General Contractor. And in a CMGC process, we bring a contractor on earlier in the process so they can participate in the actual design process. And that allows them to positively impact the schedule and pricing and construction phasing. So, for example, in engaging with potential contractors, we've already found that with the current design, we think we can construct the bus lanes in one construction cycle instead of two. So those are some of the benefits you have to bringing on a CMGC earlier, and that's what will be discussed on Thursday with the board.
Okay. So what are we talking about? I mean, have we got all the environmental work done?
Oh, the environmental work has been done for a few years. We have a final design engineering firm on board. We're getting close to 30% final design. So, yeah, people are going to start seeing a lot of movement here over the next year.
And construction?
And there will be very robust public input, so lots of opportunities to comment, ask questions, et cetera.
When should we see actual construction on 224 to make way for these BRTs?
I think that will be early 2027 or late in 2026. We've been told that we can expect service in 2027.
Okay. And again, that's basically going to allow the bus to just kind of move through any traffic that is there on the outside of the 224.
Exactly. The bus will be in its own dedicated lane. Mm-hmm. And I would like to remind everyone in the public, I know there's been some question about how much pavement will actually be added to 224. And at its very widest point, we'd only be adding 10 feet of pavement.
10 feet width, is that what you're saying?
Correct, yeah, total addition.
Okay, let's see. As you know, we have a citizen referendum drive underway to overturn the county council's vote on the amendment to change the development agreement for Dakota Pacific. If that is successful, what does it mean for High Valley Transit? I know that you wouldn't get a new transit center.
We would not get a new transit center. But I think more important to High Valley Transit is that we fully supported the council's vote. We thought it represented a significant step toward achieving the visionary goals outlined in the Kibble Junction neighborhood plan. And we were excited about the positive impacts that the project would have on our community and its alignment with our shared objectives for a more connected future. And to put it very bluntly, if we don't cooperate and provide reasonable feedback on this project, something that no one wants is going to be built. We don't see any scenario in which it remains open space, and we fully believe that the community should be allowed to realize all of the benefits that the council extracted from the developer.
Okay, well, that's coming from the county's point of view. Certainly citizens don't feel that way.
I don't agree. I think we have a number of very vocal citizens. We have a county of over 42,000 people. And to be quite frank, most of them are working and taking care of kids and going to football games, and they're not attending county council meetings, and they're getting limited information into the scope of what's happening.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to mention?
Just want to reiterate, Happy New Year. Everybody ride transit.
Okay, Caroline, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Caroline Rodriguez is the executive director of High Valley Transit. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.